We are in a situation in the world where we are on a tipping point. If we don't get people to act in new ways, and that's both system change and behavior change, we will tip the wrong way. And I believe that popular culture, arts, and the like, that is what can help us move both as human beings, but also as systems. If we had to convince the world with data and facts and figures, we would already have done it. We have all the data, we have all the information, we actually also have a lot of the solutions. And then you can say, why don't we see that change? Because we can't feel it.
Welcome to Express Change, a podcast about art and activism.
Right now, we're treating people and the planet like they're here to serve the economy, when really it should be the other way around. What will it take for us to reimagine and remake our economies to deliver social justice on a healthy planet? We're part of a global movement that's trying to do just that.
There's a popular saying, it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism. Our cultural mainstream hardly ever imagines what a different system could look like. We want to find out how new and innovative art can help us change our view on politics, economics, the world, and our fate.
To get to these answers, we'll talk to artists and creatives from a wide range of fields, backgrounds, and parts of the world. I am Marina Gattas, Culture and Public Policy Lead at the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, based in São Paulo, Brazil.
And I am Martin Oetting, an artist and writer based in Berlin, Germany. Thank you so much for listening. This is episode 4 of Express Change. Katja Iversen is CEO of the Museum for the United Nations UN Live, an unconventional, borderless museum connecting people everywhere to the work and values of the United Nations. They work with popular culture players and platforms in film, music, gaming, arts, and sports to foster a stronger sense of shared belonging on this planet and to inspire positive action. In the past, Katja has been an advisor to private and public sector institutions and leaders, including the World Economic Forum, the G7, and the World Health Organization. Katja, it's such a pleasure to have you with us here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on this great podcast. You know, I can talk about well-being economy, arts activism for a long time, and I'm so happy that we get the chance to do that here, because what is more connected than the well-being of people and planet and arts with the activism?
Thank you so much. I mean, we could almost write it like that in our press release. At the end of last year, you published a top 10 list of cultural initiatives that had a positive impact in the world. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The Museum for the United Nations UN Live in December 2023 put out the first list of culture for impact. And we have highlighted 10 popular culture initiatives that have inspired us during the year. And we do that to highlight the power of popular culture. So whether it's the Barbie movie or it's the music from AC who puts focus on biodiversity and climate change, or it's fashion that also really highlights the different expressions and how you can draw attention to both issues but also injustices. So having come out with a list like this and really working on, as we do at UN Live, the power of popular culture is to highlight why arts, sports, film, movies, fashion, gaming is important both for us as human beings, but also for societies and for the change we need to make.
How did work with culture and activism begin? How does that journey begin for you? Have you always seen art as a catalyst for change?
So I have worked in development and in changing the world my whole life. I worked in education, I worked in gender equality, I worked in the broader sustainable development issues, both people and planet. I've been an activist, I've been a UN worker, I've been you know, and high-level advisor. I've worked on many of the different issues, but also many of the different kind of ways, advocacy, communications, capacity building, all of that. I've always had an eye to what it is that popular culture and arts can do. If we had to convince the world with data and facts and figures, we would already have done it. We have all the data, we have all the information, we actually also have a lot of the solutions. And then you can say, why don't we see that change? Because we can't feel it. Because it doesn't speak to our soul, it speaks to our brain. We know it's our heart, it's our soul that get us as human beings to feel, but also to act. So the combination of data, facts, figures, solutions, strategies, but also with arts, with broader popular culture, it sets another stage. I don't want to say that I've been an expert on this because I haven't, but I've always been able to see the change potential. We are in a situation in the world where we are on a tipping point. If we don't get people to act in new ways, and that's both system change and behavior change, we will tip the wrong way. You know, we're seeing polarization. We're seeing inequalities of all kinds. We're seeing planetary disaster. And so we are at a tipping point, and we need to work in new ways. And I believe that popular culture, arts, and the like, that is what can help us move both as human beings, but also as systems. And I am in a place where there's things I know and there's things I don't know. I come with some experiences, but I also work with really good people that can teach me.
Yeah, that speaks to so many things. What you said is so mirrored by other conversations we've been having. There seems to be such a consensus on our over-reliance on data. Well, we need to speak more to the emotions. And I've been sort of interrogating myself. Just the other day, I was trying to convince people to put a solar power station on the roof of a building. And I went at them with only facts. And they said no. And I realized afterwards, I wasn't speaking to their feelings that they needed of trust and of empathy and of belonging and so forth. And so I'm wondering, and this is my follow-up question to what you just said, what makes us fall into the facts and figures and data trap all the time, even though we know really as humans that we need something else to change our ways? Why do the facts and presenting them and thinking that the numbers and the data seems to be convincing? Why does that always happen to us when it needs to be something else that we need to be doing?
I think that people often present and lead argumentation with facts and figures because we're schooled in that. That's the schooling system. We're schooled in left brain. And that's how you build an argument. That's how you make a case. But you have to combine it with all the other kinds of arguments. So what I often do is I bring in a bouquet of arguments. I have the emotional ones. I have the data one. I have the solutions one. I have the big picture, small picture, personal gain, all of that. And then you can kind of, you can move them around. But we have just not been good enough to also think people with titles as human beings. Ministers of finance, heads of states, you know, ministers of this, that, and the other, business leaders as people with emotions. We are seeing a polarization in the world. And we are seeing that people are losing a feeling of belonging. People, we see an empathy deficit. And what happens when people don't feel connected, don't feel they belong, or don't feel that there's anything they can do, the next emotion is either apathy, indifference, or aggression. So what we say, we need to get back to, and lending from the charter of the UN, we the peoples, we need to get back to a global we, a feeling of belonging, a feeling of connectedness, maybe a little old-fashioned feeling of solidarity. And we do that by meeting people where they are, with messages they understand through media they use. You can get to people on the screens they already use and the apps they use. Then you get to them, and with messages they can understand, not the development lingo, not the economic lingo, but something that they can both feel with their heart and understand with their brain. Then we can get a lot further. And then we can kind of push that sense of belonging, of global we, but also of individuals being agents of change, that there's actually something I can do.
So much of our ways of talking about the economy are setting it as something that's apart from us, that we have no agency, and that therefore things will always be the way that they are. I'm wondering, and this is quite a cool opportunity to ask someone who's been advising so many of these economic institutions, the G7, the World Economic Forum, if you could walk into one of those rooms and actually affect one change, what would it be? What would you like to see happening at the level of these international economic organizations?
We need to change how we see the economy as something abstract, a system, to something that is actually here for people and planet. So if I could change something when I'm with the World Economic Forum or, you know, in whatever, you know, big, powerful people we meet, it would be, one, invest in culture and in popular culture, because it is a tremendous change agent, but also revise how we see the economy. It is a means for well-being of people and planet. It is not a gain in itself. So are we doing things for the good of the economy, or are we doing things for the well-being of people and planet? And it's a mental change. One of the central things in the well-being economy, and one of the central things in creating a much stronger sense of global belonging and local belonging, is community. You know, so many elements, so many solutions, so many, you know, interventions that could bring a stronger well-being economy is anchored in community. And that can both be a small community and a large community. But if we look at the economy, we look at the investment on city level, on regional level, not just national level, it is also about the investment in people, in the community, in the local community. And that's what we as people need to feel we belong. We need to feel that we are seen. We need to feel that we're accepted. We need to feel that we contribute. When we look at the sense of global belonging, a lot of that can also be driven technologically. You know, we are much more connected than we have ever been technologically, but it's interesting because sometimes it looks as if we are humanly much more disconnected. But with a concerted effort and also working with arts, working with the big popular culture platforms, we can change that. You and Live, we do it different ways. We have a big program called Global We, where we have portals around the globe, where we actually get people to walk into portals and meet each other across geographies, across hierarchies, across ages, across issues. And just an example, 3 weeks ago, we had a portal at the Healthy Cities Network in Utrecht. And then we had portals open across the globe where the mayors who met at this Healthy City annual meeting, they could go in and meet young people and other not so former young people from across the globe and have a conversation about what does a healthy city look like. And it was the big and mighty who walked in, and then they met, you know, people from around the globe. And that, when you walk in there, you take off your title, you take off your hat, you take off your ego and your logo, and you meet as people. And it was tremendous what happened. What happens mentally, you go in there for 45 minutes and you meet people that you had never seen, never met before, but you connect. And it changed the meeting. And the meeting became a discussion about belonging, and it became a discussion about empathy and how we together can build a healthy city. It was not just, you know, economy. It was not just budgets. It was also about that feeling of sitting by the river within your community with people you love. At the same time, we work with some of the biggest cultural platforms in the world. And I can tell you, I can't use names, but I can tell you, I bet you have them on your phone. We work with them to really mobilize the many. We're talking hundreds of million people here who, through their actions online, not just likes and hearts and things like that, but actions, will help conserve nature and get a whole new feeling of nature through nature sounds. So, you know, it's both the deep, where you meet person to person, people to people, but it's also the wide where we work with popular culture to create that sense of global belonging, but also action and behavior change. Because this is not just about feelings, it's actually also about taking action. Because the world is at that tipping point, and it's now.
If you talk about the big platforms, the things we all have on our phones, we all know that those platforms nowadays, it wasn't always like that, but nowadays they're very much driven by a very specific economic mindset. And the people who run these platforms, you know, we call it platform capitalism, where everything is based on economies of scale and very few people in the Silicon Valley, particularly, controlling the fates of the many through the ways they design these apps and so forth. So I'm wondering, what does it feel like to go to these organizations that are incredibly powerful these days through sheer economic and media power and to talk to them about something like this? Does the issue of system change come up? Or is it something that stays on the level of, oh, we're doing something good on that day and everyone will be green and wear their green hat? You know, I see a conflict there, and I would like to know how you experience that conflict.
These programs are much more than one day. They are long-term involvement. My experience working with private sector, which I have done quite a bit, I've kind of the UN, the government, private sector. My experience is that in every single system, there's people who want to see profound change. And if we can mobilize these people to do the right thing, wherever they sit, I'm for it. I can do the capitalist criticism. I know, I read the books. I can do all of that. But I also know that it's the systems we have right now, and we can't wait until we've broken down the system. The approach to it, that you need to find the right people, you need to work with the right people, and you need to change the system. Because the other way won't work. We are not going to change the system and then start doing good, because then we can be waiting for Godot.
I wanted to just follow up on that as well. I've seen just how 2023 and all of the major conflicts that have exploded around the world, we're talking of a dozen different conflicts, many of them very much directly rooted in our economic systems and extraction, exploitation of people. And it's brought a lot of distrust as well in international institutions and their ability to bring about a shared vision of belonging and of shared humanity. When you're talking now in this role and looking at popular culture and its ability to bring people together, how are you seeing that journey and that transformation of the wider institutions as well that people are distrusting right now?
Well, let's face it, a lot of the polarization is driven by some of these, you know, the media, when it bleeds, it leads, you know, so absolutely aware of that and very critical of it. Just as those powers are used for bad, they can also do good and be used for good. The amount of money that some people who don't like human rights, and particularly women's rights, they would invest in getting the opposition towards rights to be strong, was staggering. Is staggering. You know, whether it's women's right to their own body, whether it's the right to a clean environment, whether it's labor rights, it's staggering as invested against that. It's scary. But I also want to say that people who have been for it have not invested the same. You know, people have been complaining about it, and we could see it at the UN, we could see it everywhere. But the funders who could help change that have not stepped up to the same degree. The billions that's been invested in taking human rights down, or in oil and gas, and taking sustainable energy down, we've not seen anything like it. And that is what I think now that I'm hearing. I was at the COP28, and what we heard some of the big foundations talk about was taking risks, stepping up, investing in the right thing. They've always invested in good things, but now doing it to a much bigger degree, because this is a tipping point. So when I look at popular culture and arts, both from that emotional place of what it is that it can do, but also from a system place. That is where I see potential, but only if you invest in it.
A big part of shifting the conversation in the well-being economy is about asking those questions of what areas of the economy do we want to promote and what areas of the economy would we want to demote that actually harm well-being versus promoting well-being. And you've mentioned a few times the role of the arts and culture sector and the need for more investment and for more funding towards that. If we achieved the goals that we set out to achieve and we managed to transform our economies radically, what would you say the life of an artist or a cultural producer look like in that future?
Throughout history, storytelling, arts have been key elements in society and in communities. Yeah, the storytellers who was kind of the keeper of the stories of the whole ancestry. You've had the wise women who were the ones who knew what all the plants were being used for. You'd have the musician who would, you know, play when you had to both celebrate and cry. So you've had the storytellers be absolutely key in societies. I don't see artists having the same status today. When we talk about community and when we talk about belonging, when we talk about the togetherness and connectedness, telling things not just as with facts and figures, but with imagery and art and stories that moves your heart is absolutely key for us to feel connected. We know that when you meet new people, you don't just want their CV, you want to know who they are, and you tell stories about your lives. That's what connects you. Tell a story about your kids, if that's what connects you. Story about what makes you happy and what makes you cry. And that's what connects people. So if we're talking about a society where well-being of both people and planet is at the center, and not just wealth and growth and that, then I see stories and I see arts as an absolute central point. And I don't necessarily see it something that is only for artists. There's an artist in all of us, but there are some who are a lot better than others. So I see arts as both as competencies, but also as something that makes us as more whole human beings. I am not a good musician, but I do love to play and sing.
What's the kind of art forms or pieces of art or art styles where you go, they fill my heart or they make me cry, they make me feel bliss? What are they for you personally?
I can share an experience, you know, working in the United Nations on some pretty tough issues, women dying in childbirth and other issues, where you put a professional cover on to actually deal with it every day. Because, you know, when you know how many mothers or women die every day in childbirth, you have to kind of find coping mechanisms. And I still remember sitting, flipping through some photos. I was sitting at my desk, and it was that photo that made all my defense break down, because that's what made it touch not just my brain, but my heart and humanity. And it was of a man with the kids on the grave of their mother. Broke me. And that was good, because we can also get so professional at what we do that we forget it while we're in it.
Not much of a question, but a quote that comes to mind and that I really like by Stella Adler. She says, "Life beats down and crushes the soul, and art reminds you that you have one." And so when you talk about, you know, everyone having a bit of an artist in ourselves and playing with art, regardless of whether you're good or not, I think that's such a powerful way too of connecting us spiritually into our souls and back into the things that connect us and that make life worthwhile, and reminding us that life can be beautiful.
I totally agree. Yeah. So as human beings, we need it, but also as systems, we need it. What I saw at COP28 in Dubai was a much bigger focus on arts, entertainment, popular culture. I'm not seeing that to the same degree before. And I know that there's good thoughts in the works on how, of course, in Brazil at COP30, that hopefully will be put up a big notch. Because we can move and activate the many that way. And not just the many, but also the people in power. Because they don't only react to facts and figures. I don't want to talk about arts as a tool, but focusing more on the popular culture, on culture, and the different aspects of that, there's a lot of change that lies within it.
People need hope too, right? That change is possible. What has given you the most hope recently that change is possible at the Museum of the UN and UN Live, that we're in the right direction?
When I experienced and heard about the Museum for the United Nations and read about the mandate and met the team and saw how they think differently and some of the coalitions that are building, that left me so hopeful that I actually said, this needs to get a go. I think those coalitions that the UN Live built with people and groups who have not worked together before, but we can convene both because of carrying the UN brand as an extension of the UN, but also because of some of the combination of arts, of popular culture, but also of thinking systemically and thinking big scale. That left me very hopeful. And I can see a lot of good things happening. Experiencing what the global we portals can do when people connect across what would normally be considered barriers leaves me extremely hopeful. And seeing what that does to the big and mighty, but also to normal people, the kids or the young people from the favela in Brazil who connected with young people in Kigali and in Johannesburg and got that feeling of, oh my God, they're like us, you know, and they had hardly been out of their city before. And suddenly they are connecting with people across the globe and saying things are different, but there's a lot of things that's the same. We're struggling with some of the same and we're dreaming of some of the same. And seeing that happen left me hopeful for humanity.
Your own job, the one you took on, is the thing that gives you a lot of hope. I mean, that's congratulations for that as well. I think that's amazing.
If 2023 were a piece of art, any format, could be a painting, could be a book, could be a song, what title would you give it?
Step it up, because we all got to step it up. Nobody can do everything, but we can all do something. And finding that something we can do in big and in small, that is what's going to change the world.
Thank you for listening. Express Change is supported by the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, the leading collaboration of organizations, alliances, movements, and individuals working to transform the economic system. Find out more at weall.org.
Express Change is produced and edited by Martin Oetting in collaboration with Marina Gattas and the team at the Wellbeing Economy Alliance. You can find out more about my work at martinoetting.com. That's Martin, OETTING.com.